From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, in the wake of the withdrawal of some U.S. troops from a portion of northeastern Syria, Turkish President Erdogan announced this morning the start of Operation Peace Spring. Turkish troops afterward reportedly crossed the border into Syria following Turkish jets and artillery pounding of Syrian Kurdish targets in that region. In just a moment, I'll be joined by CBN's Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell, as well as Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin with the latest. And on a more encouraging note, the Trump administration took multiple actions yesterday against the Chinese government and Chinese businesses linked to human rights abuses and repression, along with the persecution of Chinese citizens based upon their faith. Oklahoma Senator James Lankford, co-chair of the Senate Values Action Team, is here a little bit later with those details. And here is something you probably won't hear in the media, a shocking report from the Center for Disease Control detailing the soaring rate of sexually transmitted diseases in the United States. Why is this significant and what is behind the record levels? Dr. Michelle Critella, the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians, joins us with some answers. Also, the Supreme Court will be hearing oral arguments on an abortion case out of Louisiana, which has many court watchers saying could be the case that undoes Roe v. Wade. Louisiana's Attorney General Jeff Landry is here with more on that case a little bit later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. Let me remind you, coming up Friday, the Values Voter Summit, the 2019 Values Voter Summit right here in Washington, D.C. Still time to join us. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and find out more. All right, Turkey's government launched an offensive into northeastern Syria today in what initially appeared to be an operation targeting Syrian Kurdish fighters who have played a central role in the U.S.-led battle against the Islamic State. Now, Turkish President Erdogan announced the start of the offensive in a Twitter message shortly after 4 p.m. local time. He said, quote, the Turkish armed forces, together with the Syrian National Army, just launched Operation Peace Spring against PKK, YPG, and Daesh terrorists in northern Syria. Now, the United States began pulling back troops along the Turkish border with northeastern Syria ahead of the threatened military invasion by Turkey and then the growing fears of jihadist resurgence. Syria's Kurds accused the U.S. of turning its back on its allies. Joining me to provide their analysis are CBN's Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell, who is in the Middle East, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who joins me here in studio. Gentlemen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
Hey, Chris, let me start with you. What have you heard from people on the ground there in northeast Syria?
Well, I just got off the phone just a few minutes ago with Pastor Zani. He's with the Church of the Brethren in Kobani, right there on the Turkish-Syrian border. His wife has actually left for a safer place, but apparently their phones have been cut off. We were able to communicate him with a more secure application. But they are hearing bombing right now. They fear for their lives. They fear that what happened in a place called Afrin back in March of 2018, when the Turkish army, along with jihadist forces, came in and they ethnically cleansed that area. They killed Christians, burned churches. They hunted down Muslim background believers who had converted to Christ. And so they are seeing actually what they have been wanting for many months, that the Turkish would invade, and they are fearing a genocide right now, Tony.
General Boykin, let me ask you, are those concerns legitimate?
I don't think there's any question they're legitimate. I'd like to find something positive in this, but it's like putting lipstick on a pig. You know, you just have a pig with lipstick, and that's what this is. I see no redeeming, you know, features in this whole thing that's going on, but I think Chris said something very important. He said the Turkish military with Islamic jihadists went into Kobani there and killed Christians. It's very important to understand that the Turks will embrace their Sunni brothers. Even though they may be radical Islamic jihadists, the Turks will embrace them if it suits their purpose.
What are you hearing about that, Chris? I mean, the Kurds were holding some 11,000 ISIS prisoners in that region and a number of facilities.
Right.
What's happening with that?
Well, before I get to that, Tony, I'll just add to what the general said, is that from the Turkish point of view, this is seen as a jihad. In a pro-Erdogan newspaper just a few days ago, they said that this was the army of Mohammed coming against the unbelievers. I also found out earlier tonight that the head of the Turkish Religious Affairs is asking for the mosques of Turkey to pray conquest prayers from the 8th surah of the Quran. So this is something that they see as a jihad against the unbelievers. And that would include Christians, Yazidis, the Kurds, all the people of northeast Syria. So I think people need to understand this is not just a peace corridor trying to take care of a terrorist group. From a Turkish point of view, this is a jihad.
To that point, General, let me ask you this. A spokesman for President Erdogan writing in the Washington Post today called for international support for Turkey's offensive. Chris made reference to this. He said in this piece that Turkey has no ambition in northeastern Syria except to neutralize a longstanding threat against Turkey's citizens and to liberate the local population from the yoke of armed thugs, end quote. Is there a substantial threat to Turkey from this northeastern region?
Of course, there are elements there that could be a threat to a Turkish village across the border or something like that. But what you heard coming out of this diplomat's mouth is called taqiyya. It's lying to protect the faith. It is taqiyya, pure and simple. They are lying about their ambitions. And as you and I know, based on what a Mideast leader told us, Erdogan has a long-term ambition to create a caliphate and to ultimately be the caliph. He is an Islamist supremacist.
Chris, the Kurdish forces there, are they digging in for a confrontation with the Turkish forces?
Well, actually, Tony, what I've just heard is that the Syrian Democratic Forces leadership are looking at maybe a 24 to a 48-hour window. And if the United States does not come in and help stop this invasion by either a no-fly zone, that they quite possibly might turn to the Assad regime and surrender. So they would see the Assad regime as a lesser evil than Erdogan's invasion. Now, the consequences of that are dire because that would, first of all, ISIS prisoners, to your other questions, would likely be released. They may go into Iraq. That reignites this whole battle against Iraq that the U.S. had been fighting for years. The other thing, it brings the Iranians in. There are thousands of Shiite militias that I've been told are on the Iraqi border as well as the other Syrian border that could come in. So that really puts Israel in great danger. It brings Iran closer to Israel, and it just fractures that whole area that had been, as we've talked many times, as a tree of liberty to be swallowed up by the Assad regime, by Russians, and by Iran. And ironically, it seems like the administration is enabling a jihad that's going to allow Iran to threaten Israel.
So, but the trade-off for the Christians and the Kurds there in northeast Syria, if they go to the Syrian regime, is they may lose some of their freedom, but they live, as opposed
exactly.
to if Turkey rolls in.
They do. They have had religious freedom there. They have people, the church in Kobani that we were at, that was certified by the new government there. They have permission to change religion, which is unprecedented in the Middle East. And so that would, much of that would likely disappear. The SDF is looking at this as, you know, they want to protect the lives of the people. Their liberty may go, but their lives would be spared.
So, General, let me ask you this. If the Assad regime links up with them, they say, look, we need your help. Is there then a confrontation between Syrian forces under Assad and the Turkish forces, or does Turkey back away?
Well, I don't think that, I mean, there's always that possibility, yes, absolutely. But keep in mind that what this means is, what Chris just told us was, that ultimately this is going to bring Russia down on the side of these people that today live in a very free society there in northeast Syria. They're going to be under the control of both Bashar al-Assad as well as Russia. And what does that mean? That means the next one to enter the fray is Iran. That opens this up. And keep in mind that Bashar al-Assad is an Alawite. Technically, they are Shias. Their allies are Iran. So this brings Iran into it. And there's just no good outcome of this.
So, Chris, what are the... As you're talking to the folks on the ground there in northeast Syria, what are they asking for?
Well, they're asking, first of all, for a no-fly zone that would stop the airstrikes against these people. That's number one. The other thing is that they're asking is that if the PKK could be removed from the terror list, which would undermine the legal basis that Erdogan is saying, why he wants to come in. He's calling this border between northeast Syria and Turkey a terror corridor. I was there back earlier this year. This is an area where many Christians live. They were living peacefully. There is no threat from what's basically a very strong militia against one of the largest armies in the world. So they don't pose that kind of threat to NATO. So I think that that's not the threat that Erdogan is saying. This was a peaceful region, and so what they're looking for, the no-fly zone, and maybe undermining the legal basis that Erdogan has for this invasion.
So if there's a no-fly zone in place, the Syrian Democratic Forces believe that they can hold their ground against the Turkish forces?
It would give them a fighting chance against this invasion right now. And, that's been bombing some Christian villages. Qamishli is many Christians live there. And actually, I think one of the first casualties was a Christian woman. So that's, unlike I know that the statement by the White House said, they were going to hold Turkey to protecting civilians, religious minorities, including Christians. But it's already there been some of the casualties have been Christians.
Well, let me say one thing. You remember, we got to go back in history to understand how the Kurds wound up in Turkey. And there was actually, after World War I, there was a petition that was agreed to by all parties, basically, that gave the Kurds a homeland. The problem was 3 years later, there was another petition, there was another agreement that gave all that land to Turkey, just like the Brits gave Jordan to the Hashemite king. So, once again, it goes back 100 years to drawing lines on a map.
All right, General Boykin, Chris Mitchell, thanks so much for staying up late over there in the Middle East to join us this evening.
Thanks so much, Tony.
All right, folks, I want to encourage you to pray for this situation. I'm hard-pressed to find a good outcome here. Many we've met personally with many of these people, and... we pray for their safety and their well-being and for religious freedom. It was beginning to prosper in that region of the world. All right, when we come back, shocking numbers of sexually transmitted diseases in the United States. What's behind it? Talk with Dr. Michelle Critella next. Don't go away.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Are you a student? Do you know a student? Well, this year, students can apply for scholarships to attend FRC Action's Values Voter Summit at no cost. At VVS, students will join thousands of like-minded conservatives who care about the issues that are shaping our nation. They'll enjoy our student mixer trivia night, topics covering everything from history to politics to the upcoming 2020 election. They'll hear from key conservatives, including Ali Stuckey, Congressman Mark Meadows, Dana Lash, and more. They'll have the opportunity to pursue influential jobs and internships with reputable organizations at our job fair meet and greet. Students will also have the chance to learn how to impact our world by attending our student breakout sessions. From October 11th to 13th, come to Washington, D.C. for Values Voter Summit. This is one weekend no student should miss. Learn more about scholarships by visiting valuesvotersummit.org/students or by calling 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. According to a new report from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, sexually transmitted diseases in the U.S. reached a record level in 2018. Now, why is this significant and what's behind these record levels? Well, joining me now with her analysis is Dr. Michelle Critella. She's the Executive Director of the American College of Pediatricians. Dr. Critella, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is alarming. I mean, what's behind this? Why are we seeing these record levels of sexually transmitted diseases?
Well, the CDC has pointed out that this is the fifth year in a row now that it's climbing, and particularly the gonorrhea, syphilis, and chlamydia were the three most common STDs identified. And you're right, it's deeply concerning. And the reasons, they're multifactorial, but, you know, we live in such a sexually saturated culture. The CDC identified that the age group that is has been hit the hardest with these STDs is actually ages 15 to 24. Advertising works, and we go out of our way to sanction Hollywood and advertisers when they're pitching cigarettes and alcohol to youth, but when it comes to sex and violence, we give them a free pass. And this has been proven. This has been proven in studies that youth, they're watching their, whether it's the movies, the social media, video games, they're just seeing, they're constantly bombarded with sexual messages, even in music. That impacts behavior. They imitate what they see. They're not seeing consequences. They're not seeing, they're certainly not seeing character values being modeled for them. And that's, I think, the most significant factor impacting that age group.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because as I read through the report, it was interesting that Dr. Gail Bolin, who is the director of the CDC's Division of STD Prevention, it's interesting that the title, her title, when asked about the, you know, what's behind this, pointed to a combination of factors that appeared linked to the increase in STDs, including social factors that can affect access to health care, like stigma, drug use, poverty, and unstable housing. There seems to be a lack of focus. It's really not about prevention. What they're talking about more is about treatment. If you go on through the report, as they talk about, they want to be able to make sure there's better education so people can get the treatment early so that these diseases can be treated. They're very short on prevention, and there's one way to prevent this is if we treat sexual relations as historically most societies have, as something to be confined in a monogamous relationship between one man and one woman.
Right, or if we want to put that into public health language, primary prevention and secondary prevention. So the CDC is focused on secondary prevention, meaning, okay, go out, find those early identification, find those who are infected, and let's cure them and stop the infection that way. And of course,
and that's fine. I mean, we want to do that.
Absolutely.
We want to do that.
Nobody is saying don't do that. We absolutely must. And but
if there's a hole in the bottom of the bucket, shouldn't we?
Drugs. When it comes to smoking, drugs, and alcohol, they take public health takes a two-pronged approach. Okay, let's target. Let's go out and educate people so they prevent. They do not even engage in the risk factor. And when it comes to adolescents, we know that they're even physically, they're capable of having sex, but their bodies, especially young women, their cervix is immature and it's more prone to be it's more prone to being infected with these organisms when they're under age 21. And neurologically, cognitively, their assessment for risk and judgment. When you're a teenager, you're just not thinking like an adult. You don't make good adult decisions as a teenager. And we know that, and we recognize it in every area except sexual behavior. And what I should mention here, I want to recommend a resource. Go online to WeAscend, WEASCEND. WeAscend is an organization that promotes sexual risk avoidance. They have resources for schools, communities, parents, and they're backed by research. So WeAscend is an excellent resource for parents and communities who want to look for curricula that have been proven to delay onset of sexual activity.
Let me just ask you this, because we're almost out of time, Dr. Curtello.
Sure.
This is not without risk. I mean, some of these diseases can lead to infertility as well as even death.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, these are quite significant things we're talking about here. Yes, many of them can be treated with antibiotics, although we're seeing some strains now that are being resistant to that.
Yes.
This is a major health issue.
It is, and particularly the you're right. So especially chlamydia can lead to infertility. It's the chlamydia and gonorrhea. You can be infected just as you can be infected with HIV and have no symptoms, and so you don't get treated, and then it progresses, and by the time you're diagnosed, you could be infertile. You're right. With syphilis, the danger here is that is being passed on to babies from mothers. To babies, and in babies, it can cause severe health problems and even death.
Well, it's certainly something parents need to be aware of in training, teaching their children, their teenagers, and so on. These are conversations parents need to have with their children. Dr. Curtello, as always, great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. And folks, you need to do this. These are serious things, because if you're not going to have the conversations with your children, somebody is. And they're not going to be sharing your values, most likely. All right. Coming up next, Louisiana may have a case. Well, they will have a case before the Supreme Court, which could, according to some court watchers, be the undoing of Roe v. Wade. The Attorney General of Louisiana, my good friend Jeff Landry, is here next. Stay tuned.
radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed last Friday to take up a major abortion case that court watchers believe could be the undoing of the 1973 Roe v. Wade landmark decision, as well as the Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which is the prevailing case law on abortion in the country. At issue is a 2014 Louisiana law that requires every abortionist to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of where the abortionist aborts babies. Now, this is actually building upon a law that I first passed back in 1999 that regulated abortion clinics, and the legislature has gone further. And this is what's going to appear before the Supreme Court. Joining me now is the Attorney General of the state of Louisiana, our good friend Jeff Landry. Jeff, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Tony. Great to be on your show.
Well, I can't think of a better state to take the issue of life before the Supreme Court than Louisiana. Let's talk about the implications of this case. First, as we talked about, this is about admitting privileges. What is going to be the issue before the court?
Well, there's actually going to be two issues before the court, Tony, which is kind of what's real exciting. Number one is whether or not Louisiana's admitting privileges is constitutional, right? Is a permissible activity. We believe it is. We believe that Louisiana's law is opposite of Helstat, and that the Helstat case that was out of Texas, which was the Texas admitting privileges case. A lot of the mainstream media is making people believe that the law is identical. That, of course, is like many of the things that they say, absolutely not true. And so that's before the court. In addition, before the court was a motion that we put before the court in a cross motion asking about standing, third party standing, which is part of kind of what I call the abortion distortion doctrine in front of the Supreme Court. And that is that we treat the abortion industry differently than we treat all other parties when they come before the court. In almost any other matter, the court requires that the party before them is the actually aggrieved party. But, you know, under the abortion distortion doctrine, they allow these third party standings. And so we basically have a double standard. The court has now agreed to look at that particular st- standing doctrine. And, of course, if that would be overturned, you would see the amount of abortion litigation significantly be reduced.
Now, the court has been very selective in the abortion cases that it takes up. In fact, it's turned down many cases, or I should say many, a few cases from the states that people were hoping that they would take. This one, you know, goes to really almost, I would say, the heart of the prevailing jurisprudence on abortion, which appears to be why the court has agreed to take this case.
Well, excuse me. You know, Tony, I would think that this case is as much about that as it is about women's health and a double standard that the court has allowed to prevail around the country when it comes to the health care of women. So, in Louisiana, a woman who goes to any other health care clinic receiving any other procedure under which she's mildly sedated, that doctor is required to have admitting privileges. So why wouldn't we require doctors at abortion clinics to have the same?
Right. They've always been treated differently. I know in 99, when I passed the first one, we simply added them to the ambulatory surgical provision in the law where they're treated like every other outpatient clinic. They sued against that and won the first time. We came back, though, a second time and were able to establish that standard. But you're right. In every aspect, abortion has been treated differently in almost every other category. And it shows how political this issue is.
Exactly. And so let's just step back for a second and step out of the argument on the merits. And let's just look at the law. You know, what makes America great in this judicial system is the fact that Lady Justice is blind and she holds a scale, and the scale is equal, right? Which means there's equity under the law. Everyone should be treated the same under the law. No one gets, you know, I always say people get equal rights, not extra rights. And
right.
So what we've had since Roe is a carve out, an extra right, as you would say, for the pro-choice movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we hope this case does is, again, rebalance the scales of justice.
Well, when you look at the new members on the court that have appeared in the last 2.5 years, two justices appointed by President Trump, one replacing Anthony Kennedy, it looks like this could be a favorable court to that argument.
It could. You know, it's interesting. You know, I know many conservatives really gave Justice Roberts a tough time. But, I think that he's really positioning the court to take this case and give us a favorable outcome.
All right. Attorney General Jeff Landry, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us. And we're going to be watching this case very, very closely.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. See you soon, my friend. All right, don't go away. We're going to come back with more Washington Watch. Oklahoma Senator James Lankford joins me to talk about actions by the United States government yesterday, Department of Commerce, that putting restrictions, blacklisting some Chinese businesses and restricting U.S. companies from doing business with these companies and organizations that repress Chinese citizens. We talk about it next, right here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman. For decades, the nation's leading abortion supplier has claimed to be the champion of women's rights, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Planned Parenthood has repeatedly violated the law and violated women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the devastating effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities, Planned Parenthood is an organization that not only promotes a culture of death, but makes it a reality. In a new brochure from FRC, you will find evidence that will challenge your assumptions about Planned Parenthood and equip you with the information you need to be a true champion for women and the lives of unborn children. To order this brochure and to download your free digital copy, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
It's almost that time of year. FRC Action's annual Values Voter Summit is just around the corner, but there is still time to register. Join thousands of like-minded conservatives who, just like you, care about the state of our nation and want to do their part in protecting and promoting religious freedom and the sanctity of life, free speech, and marriage and the family. From October 11th through the 13th, come to Washington, D.C. to attend FRC Action's Values Voter Summit and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington. And learn how you can, too. FRC Action President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and Congressman Mark Meadows. The 2020 elections are fast approaching, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. Ask about our scholarship for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Hey, let me remind you, coming up Friday, the Values Voter Summit. The Values Voter Summit coming here in to Washington, D.C., Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And just announcing today that Saturday night, as we have the Values Voter Summit Gala, we are going to be honoring Pastor Andrew Brunson with the Cost of Discipleship Award, and President Donald Trump is going to be there as our keynote speaker that night as we focus on religious freedom. And so to find out how you can be a part of a great weekend, go to TonyPerkins.com, and there's still room, but hurry up, sign up. All right, speaking of religious freedom, the Trump administration put visa restrictions on Chinese officials yesterday amid ongoing abuses of Muslim minorities in China. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the measures target officials who are believed to be responsible for or complicit in the detention and abuse of Uyghurs and other members of Muslim minority groups. Also, the Department of Commerce taking actions to blacklist 28 entities, companies, and governmental organizations alleged to be involved in the surveillance and detention of minority groups. This is significant, a big move. Many have been calling for this, and now the administration has taken those efforts. Joining me now with analysis, Republican Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, who serves on the Finance Committee, Homeland Security, and Governmental Affairs Committee. He's also the co-chair of the Values Action Team in the Senate. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Always good to be with you, Tony.
You tweeted out, it is right that the State Department continues to push for human rights, including religious freedom with China. We must continue to take action against the detention of minority religious groups and violation of human rights. This is a good move by the administration.
It is a very good move by the administration. China, over the past several years, has started clamping down on people of faith of all types. For official churches, even that have been recognized in the past, they have to remove crosses off of their building because it's not Chinese enough. Unofficial churches, individuals rounded up. We have individuals like Pastor Saw and what he has faced. But we also have 2 million plus Muslim Uyghurs in the northern part of the country that they are sent to re-education camps to learn how to be, quote unquote, more Chinese. These individuals are under heavy surveillance. They're under heavy control. They're being managed in an area and restricted in travel. This is something we as Americans would never allow and shouldn't ever allow. But we should be able to allow people to be able to live their most basic human value of their faith and to be able to carry that out. And we see that being repressed in China. It's entirely appropriate for the administration to speak out.
And I don't want people to miss the significance of this, because this doesn't happen often where an administration will take these types of actions. But we've seen this administration now in the last 6 months, even at the last ministerial in July, announcing travel restrictions against some of the militia leaders in Iraq. So they're using these tools that Congress has given them. But in particular with China, this comes at a very difficult time. Trade talks still, you know, restarting with China. And not only are there visa restrictions, but also yesterday the Department of Commerce announcing the blacklisting of 28 organizations, entities, businesses, government entities that are a part of using the artificial intelligence facial recognition to suppress, which restricts U.S. companies from doing business with some of these entities. Again, a very significant move.
It is. And it's one of the areas that I and several others have pushed on the administration and have encouraged them to say, if you're going to take this move, take it. Because while we're having trade negotiations, it is the key moment to also stand up for basic human rights and dignity. There are not a lot of things that get other countries' attention. If they don't care about the value of a life, if the state is more important than the individual, then there are very few moments to be able to get a state's attention and to say each individual is valuable. And when we're doing trade talks with them, that is the key moment to say you have economic goals. We as Americans have economic goals, but we also have humanity goals. We believe in the basic freedom of individuals to be able to not only live free, but to be able to practice their faith freely. And so it is not just a good moment. It is the best moment to be able to get their attention and to say, bring in the issue of human rights while we're also talking about economic issues.
Well, let me ask you this, Senator Lankford. When was the last time we had an administration that brought human rights, religious freedom, to the forefront of discussions with China during trade talks?
I don't recall. Just having trade talks, period, with China has been overly complicated. And the last five administrations have also all worked to be able to get to this point where this administration is now. But it is entirely appropriate to be able to bring in human rights. And I'm grateful that they haven't just said it's about the dollar, but they've also said it's about the value of each individual life and our economy. And so I don't know of a time that this has been addressed before, but I'm very grateful it is now.
But this is a drum that you've been beating, and you've made this point very clear that in all of our discussions about trade, that religious freedom, human rights should be a part of that discussion. You're seeing that in this administration, are you not?
I am, actually. In 2015, I worked to be able to get the amendment passed into law, and it was passed. When we deal with trade negotiations, any trade, formal trade deal that we have, during that process, they have to bring up the issue of religious liberty with that location. And I brought that up originally because at the time, there was conversation about having a trade deal with Vietnam. And I said, if we're going to have a trade deal with Vietnam, we have to include the area of religious liberty, because there's so many oppressed people there in Vietnam dealing with this issue of religious liberty and their freedom to be able to worship. So I brought it up at that point, not realizing how much that would also kick into a conversation about China now as well.
Yeah, in Vietnam, actually, their economy is exploding, about 8% growth last year, but they're still struggling with the issue of human rights, religious freedom in particular. Of course, one of five communist countries remaining. But I think as we continue in those discussions with countries like Vietnam, we can help them improve. But we've got to be willing to have those hard conversations.
Yeah, we can and we should. What Vietnam is experiencing right now is China's mistakes. Many companies are leaving China and their manufacturing, and they're moving to Vietnam. They're moving to other areas on the Pacific Rim to be able to do their manufacturing, to be able to get out of China, where China steals their intellectual property, and there's all sorts of other issues with employees there. And so as companies leave out from China, They're heading to Vietnam, and Vietnam is rapidly growing. But one of the things that we can do is say, hey, we're glad to be able to do business with you, but we believe in the value of each individual. We want to be able to work with you to be able to honor basic human rights and dignity.
Yeah, and I think Vietnam, since we're mentioning Vietnam, their view of America has almost supplanted their affection toward China. So they're being drawn to and the free market system. They're enjoying the growth in their economy. So hopefully we'll be consistent in holding up those American ideals and values when it comes to the individual human being, as you've articulated.
Yeah, that should be our goal. Again, we can't run every country, nor should we run every country, but we should be a city on the hill on areas about religious freedom and others. And this is something that other countries are afraid of. But as we do it in our country and as we promote it in other countries, that value will continue to be able to spread.
Senator Lankford, one final question for you, because part of this yesterday involved the Department of Commerce, part of the State Department, part Department of Commerce blacklisting these Chinese companies and entities, restricting U.S. businesses from doing business with them. But part of this use of artificial intelligence, facial recognition that's been used to suppress Uyghurs in particular, this has been facilitated by U.S. technology. There's got to be some level of responsibility, you would think, from American companies not to be a part of repressing people.
Yeah, and that is the challenge of both shareholders and of companies themselves to be able to determine what they choose to be a part of, and for the United States to be able to determine what is it that our companies are doing worldwide that can have this kind of negative effect. I think most people don't know. Many people probably listen to your show, because they're more informed, but many people don't know that in China, you have not only a credit score, but they're also experimenting with what's called a social score, that individuals in different provinces, and those provinces are testing out using facial recognition to be able to track where people go. And then if you get a low enough social score that you don't agree with the communist government, you can't get on public transportation, your kids can't get into school, you can't actually get a job, you can't travel outside the country. This is the way they track each individual, and have just a multitude of cameras around the country to be able to track the movement of every person, going all the way down to their emotion when they're walking around to be able to track, are they happy or sad based on their scoring there. That is something that we would never allow, nor should allow as a country, but we're watching a communist China figure out how to be able to manage its people and control its people to a whole new level.
And perfect that technology so that it can be exported. And that's a big concern.
And other countries are already looking at that to be able to see if they can try to manage their people in the same way that China is. Now, China's not finished this. They're experimenting in different provinces or doing it in different ways. But they're no doubt they're working to be able to perfect a system to be able to track and control their own citizens.
Well, fortunately, we have an administration that's willing to stand up against that and hopefully slow that process down until we can get a better handle on it. Senator Lankford, as always, thanks so much for taking time out to join us today.
You bet. Glad to be able to do that, Tony. Take care.
All right. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. I mean, this is a big deal that the administration, especially on the eve of these trade talks, because it upsets the stock market, it gets people all flustered, because people are not accustomed to a president who is a disruptor in many ways, and that's what this is. But it, from a standpoint of human rights and religious freedom, it is a bold move. It is the right move, and this is one that we are certainly encouraged about. Joining me now to talk more about this as we unpack this is the Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council and the Director of our Center for Religious Liberty, Travis Weber. Travis, this is a bold move by the administration.
It is, Tony. Significantly, they are hitting a number of entities involved in these activities we're deeming adverse to our foreign policy and national security interest, and it looks like going after individuals, Chinese Communist Party officials who are involved in this. We know, some of the names of these folks. We've identified some of the particular bad actors, the chief out Communist Party chief in Xinjiang province, where the Uyghurs are being placed in these camps. And there's been a lot of discussion and focus on the need to really go after them and make a point about religious freedom and human rights violations.
So the A lot of these foreign officials want to come to the United States. Families want to come to the United States. So these travel restrictions, I mean, they can't come to the United States. They're not going to be given visas to come here. So first off, they're not going to be able to come here. They're not going to be able to spread what they're doing there in China over here or seek whatever it is they might be seeking here. But I'm in particular drawn toward the blacklisting of these businesses and the restricting of U.S. companies from doing having interactions with these. I think this – I see – as we were talking about yesterday about the NBA, ESPN, you know, falling over themselves to apologize for offending China by making comments about those that are standing up for democracy in Hong Kong, how business – we've talked about Hollywood, all of these people cowing down before China out of a desire to get money, to do business with them, completely jettisoning any principles or concern for people who we know are being persecuted in that country.
And Tony, I do think this exposes a big double standard. I was talking to someone else earlier today about this and how you have the NBA seeking to please China in order to get into that market, coming under obvious pressure to toe the party line of the Chinese Communist Party when they have individuals associated with the NBA, basketball officials and players speaking out in support of Hong Kong and the protests in Hong Kong against China. Just that, expressing support for Hong Kong protesters, rather accepted expression of support for democracy drew the response of the Chinese Communist Party. And this is very similar to what we see the pressure developing on Carrie Lam, the Hong Kong top political official, under the thumb of the government of Beijing to toe their line. And companies like the NBA, entities like the NBA, companies are under this pressure. It's very significant. These companies should represent the United States, not the party line of the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, and I think American consumers need to take note of this. And by the way, the NBA, ESPN, they are not alone. I mean, there is a long list of American businesses that are operating in China. Either they have manufacturing facilities or they're benefiting somehow in some way by the markets in China. We talked about Hollywood and the fact that they are now basically allowing the Chinese Communist Party to dictate what is in movies. So Americans can make a difference by that, by not supporting these companies that are aiding and abetting these tyrants who are abusing people based upon their faith and ethnicity.
We should be aware of this, and we should know when companies are pursuing profit above all else and take action on that.
Well, this is something that we'll be discussing at the Values Voter Summit this weekend. A lot of issues will be discussed, but this is one of them, and you can be a part of that if you join us at the Values Voter Summit. Find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, who says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.